from the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Friday, February 9th, 2024. I am the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Brace yourself. It's Hawaiian Shirt Friday. Let's do the Hawaiian Shirt Friday fight song. Sing it loud and proud. Truly, the sweetest sound this side of heaven. The only way to start your weekend, believe you me. Let's get things started officially with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. And this one comes to us from Mark Twain, who said, when in doubt, tell the truth. Unless you're a politician, when in doubt, just mumble.
I have people skills. I am good at dealing with people. Can't you understand it? What the hell is wrong with you people?
Onward and upward to the so-called educational part of the blogcast. This is it.
Twisted History.
Let's have it.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
To be sure.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
See, there I go. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1942, year-round daylight saving time, also known as wartime, was reinstated here in the United States as a wartime measure to help conserve energy resources. And man, I wish they would do that now. I thought they'd already passed a law to that effect, that we were going to stay on full-time daylight. Yeah, who knows? And it was on this day in 1971, Apollo 14 returned to Earth after the third human moon landing. And while they were up there, they hit another golf ball and brought back some more moon rocks. That was cool. They also got a lot of coverage on TV. The problem was that the American people were starting to lose their interest in moon missions.
Step back, son. There's nothing to see here.
The game of politics is a game that I don't think is played very well. I mean, it's just so messy. And so it's like a free-for-all. It's chaos. And I never saw this coming. But Vice President Kamala Harris is reportedly laying the groundwork for a presidential run in 2028. All right. Well, I guess if Nikki Haley still thinks she has a shot, and Chris Christie now is talking about launching a third-party run for 2024. I don't know what it is about Christie that thinks he even has a prayer. But obviously it takes a lot of chutzpah to run for public office to begin with. But for president, gee whiz. And to say that Harris has been facing a challenging national approval rating is kind of an understatement. She's found a stronghold of support, though, within South Carolina. Now, South Carolina is a state that plays a pivotal role in the Democratic primary process. And Harris's strategy looks to be one of deep community engagement, particularly within the African-American demographic, which forms a huge portion of the Democratic base in South Carolina. And she's made frequent visits to the state since taking office, and they haven't gone unnoticed. The people there have been very appreciative of it, with prominent South Carolina Democrats already voicing their support for her potential candidacy. Now, naturally, one state isn't enough to carry her over the finish line, but you got to start somewhere, right? Now, Representative James Clyburn, who's a bit of a whack job, but he is, if nothing else, a heavyweight in South Carolina politics, and he openly endorsed Harris, no surprise there, signaling a strong local backing that might prove crucial in a future bid for the presidency. Key word there being future. Anything can happen between now and 2028. Heck, anything's going to happen between now and November. But anyhow, this support is further bolstered by the sentiments of Trav Robertson, Who the heck is Trav Robertson? Well, Trav is a former chairman of the South Carolina Democratic Party who highlighted an unspoken language between Harris and African-American women in the state, suggesting a deep-rooted connection based on shared experiences. But then that's politics, right? Now, Harris's popularity in South Carolina stands in stark contrast to her national approval ratings. Again, it's just one state, but according to a 538 Project poll, as of January 19th, the majority of Americans disapprove of the vice president, with only 37.5% approving of her performance. Now, this discrepancy poses an important, huge challenge for Harris, because she's going to have to work to bridge the gap between her regional appeal and broader national sentiment. And every time she steps up to a microphone, she embarrasses herself and the rest of us. And despite these challenges, Harris, I guess if we're going to be objective, isn't completely without her strengths, okay? For instance, you have to dig to find this stuff, but here it is. Polling conducted by Emily's List, which is a Democratic fundraising organization, found that Harris enjoys high favorability ratings among key segments of the Democratic coalition, including black women, younger voters, and college graduates. These demographics could form the cornerstone of her support base should she decide to run. Of course, she's got to raise a lot of money, but that probably won't be a huge problem for her, being that she is a Democrat. But there remains a considerable portion of Democratic and independent voters who are totally unfamiliar with Harris's personal story. Her background as California's attorney general and junior senator, which isn't good, or her accomplishments, so to speak, as vice president. Her mastery of the word salad language. And this lack of awareness presents both a hurdle and an opportunity for Harris to define her own narrative and accomplishments more clearly to the electorate. And in the meantime, she continues to play a supportive role in Biden's reelection campaign, such as it is, while simultaneously nurturing her own political ambitions. Never mind that there are plenty of rumors out there about discord between Harris and Biden. Her actions smack of a careful balancing act between loyalty to the current administration and the cultivation of her own political future. I'm sure that much of her ambition, much of her thoughts about running in 2028 are hinging on whether or not Joe Biden is reelected. And yet when you look at brain lapses like the one Biden had just the other night, I mean, you've got to ask yourself, how can this man possibly run for re-election? I mean, he's not even appearing in the Super Bowl interview, which is only a 3-minute interview. They're not going to allow him to participate in that, to their credit. They being the party. So, as the political tides ebb and flow, it's going to be interesting to see how Vice President Harris navigates the waters of public opinion. I mean, with her eyes set on 2028, her journey is going to be a testament to the enduring nature of American political ambition, to be sure, and the the never-ending quest for higher office. It's the economy, stupid. You remember that from back in the 1990s? And it was so true. Well, we have a problem with the aircraft industry right now. More specifically, Boeing. And you would have to have been living under a rock not to be aware of all the problems that have been surfacing on Boeing aircraft. Doors falling off the planes. Wings with gaffer's tape pasted on them. What is going on? Well, There are problems between labor and management, not just at Boeing, throughout the entire aerospace industry, but Boeing's largest union has gotten to the point where they've drawn a line in the sand. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, known as the IAM, or IM, they represent a pretty large workforce, 32,000 Seattle area Boeing mechanics, and they're demanding a 40% pay increase over the next 3 to 4 years. Not small. And this comes after a 2014 agreement that saw workers sacrifice pensions and, well, they had to take capped wages. And that's a deal that many now view as a concession that went too far. I remember back when that deal was struck all those years ago. It's 9 years ago, 10 years ago now. There were a lot of questions being asked. Well, the concessions were made. It's 10 years later. Now what? So these union demands arrive at a time when Boeing's already grappling with the fallout from the 737 MAX plane's safety issues. And they've not only tarnished these issues, have not only tarnished the company's reputation, but also raised some pretty serious questions about their commitment at Boeing to quality and safety. But pardon me while I get skeptical on you for a moment. There's a side of me that's wondering, could some of these problems be sabotage? I mean, it's been 10 years since those concessions were made. Nothing has changed. And yet you go to the grocery store, prices are up. You go to try to buy a car, you can't afford it. Interest rates on home loans, way the hell up. They've come down just a little bit, just a smidge. And each time that a home loan interest rate goes down 0.5%, boy, right away the government is just touting it. Hey, interest rates are coming down. Really? Not from where I sit. I don't notice it. So the recent mid-air cabin panel blowout on an Alaska Airlines MAX 9 jet, this just happened in January, it's adding fuel to the fire, prompting increased scrutiny from lawmakers and the flying public alike. John Holden, president of the IAM District 751, made it clear that the union's prepared for a work stoppage if their demands aren't met. And with contract talks looming on the horizon, the possibility of a strike, well, it's serious stuff. It would shut down Boeing plants in Washington and Oregon, which would include assembly lines for the 737 jets, which are their workhorse for Boeing. I think that's their most profitable jet right now. So a shutdown, needless to say, would deliver a pretty significant blow to Boeing's operations and financial health, because that's what it's all coming down to, right? I mean, that's a time-honored business, Boeing. And I would hate to see a great company like that come down, but obviously there's a problem either with management or labor or both. And Boeing's response to the union's demands has been pretty quiet. No immediate comment offered in the wake of the union's announcement. The company has previously expressed its intention to bargain in good faith later in the year, but intentions don't pay the bills. Don't get me wrong, I'm not a union man. I'm really not. But I can see many instances where, had it not been for the unions, labor would not be in a very good position these days. Wait a minute. They're not in a good position these days. I digress if you've seen the prices. So here we have this standoff that comes at a challenging time for Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun, who's tasked with steering the company through one of the most turbulent periods in its history. These are not fun times at Boeing. Now, in an effort to address these quality concerns, Boeing recently paused production with a one-day quality stand-down, is what they called it. Now, this was an attempt to evaluate and improve safety within the manufacturing process itself. But despite this, shares of Boeing saw an uptick, suggesting investor confidence or perhaps a market detached from the underlying labor problems. Meanwhile, the FAA has taken a more hands-on approach in the wake of the recent safety incidents. Administrator Mike Whitaker has acknowledged that the current system isn't working. And he's committed to maintaining inspectors at Boeing facilities for regular surveillance. Now, this increased oversight indicates a federal acknowledgement of the need for systemic change within Boeing's operations. But the union's push for a significant pay raise is emblematic of a broader labor movement overall that seeks to rectify past concessions and perhaps secure better compensation for workers. Do the workers deserve it? Yeah, probably. Because it reflects a growing sentiment among workers that their contributions to corporate success are undervalued and that the time has finally arrived for a rebalancing of the scales. And as Boeing and its largest union brace for what could be a protracted negotiation, the outcome is going to have a far-reaching implication, not just for the company and its employees, but for the aerospace industry as a whole. That is a very big industry. If you drive around down in Clear Lake City, Texas, just southeast of Houston, actually Clear Lake City is part of Houston. They were annexed years ago. But you see familiar names on buildings everywhere down there. McDonnell Douglas, Boeing, Lockheed Martin. You see all these famous names. And it's a huge industry. So the question remains, will Boeing acknowledge, let's call it the winds of change. Will they meet the demands of its workforce, or are they going to face the consequences of a potential strike that could further disrupt its already precarious position? Big question. I do know this. They have a plant in, South Carolina? They have a big plant in South Carolina, which is a right-to-work state. Boeing has options. They can shut down Washington and Oregon and take that business to a right-to-work state. There are plenty of those to choose from. Would that be the wise thing to do? Well, only the checkbook will be able to tell. Excellent report in the Epoch Times from Brad Jones and John Fredericks, where they say morale among U.S. Border Patrol agents has hit rock bottom. And this is according to the agents and union representatives themselves in both California and Arizona. A fellow by the name of Darren Bird, he's a spokesman for the National Border Patrol Council Union, Local 1613 in San Diego, told the Epoch Times, with the recent surge of illegal immigrants, agents believe that they're essentially breaking the laws that they were once trained to enforce. He says, we're acting as alien smugglers now. We're doing what we were trained not to do. We're basically guilty of alien smuggling. We're furthering their illegal entrance into the country. Morale is at an all-time low. Well, more than half a dozen agents in California and Arizona spoke to the Epoch Times on the condition of anonymity for fear of retaliation, agree that morale has plummeted after what they call 3 years of lax border policies by the Biden administration. Is that what it really is, though? Are they lax policies, or we just don't have a policy? I think the only policy the administration has shown is open borders. That's it. And agents know embattled Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, who was nearly impeached by the House of Representatives. In fact, there'll be another attempt next week to impeach him for alleged dereliction of duties. Mayorkas has not supported the agents, according to Mr. Byrd. Quoting him, he says, Mayorkas is trying to send us what we're referring to as hush money. He's giving us administrative leave days here and there. Like for Christmas, we got 2 days of free leave, basically, and that's been happening since Thanksgiving of 2021. He said some agents are having to drive more than 120 miles round trip from their homes to processing centers up to a month at a time. He says nobody likes their job. That takes a toll on you. Everybody is using their leave. Just the same, agents have to do what they're told, even if that means babysitting, transporting, and processing illegal aliens or face discipline. Now, even with lax border policies that allow illegal aliens to surrender to Border Patrol agents and stay in the United States, human smuggling remains a problem in San Diego County. And he said agents are having trouble reconciling that they've been ordered to do exactly what they were trained not to do and what was once considered a crime, aiding and abetting human smuggling. As a result, some have struggled with mental health issues and suicide. We're talking about the agents here. Between 2007 and 2022, Customs and Border Protection lost 149 people to suicide, and is among the highest rates of suicide compared to other law enforcement agencies, according to U.S. Texas Representative Tony Gonzalez. Gonzalez said in a statement in December, he says, working long hours and responding to high-stress situations, our men and women in green and blue are being pushed to their breaking point every single day. In 2022, 14 agents, 14 took their own lives. More than in any other year since U.S. Customs and Border Protection began tracking suicides. Recently, one motel employee in the region told the Epoch Times it's not unusual for illegal immigrants to evade agents or flee encampments to nearby border towns, even after they're apprehended at the border wall. The woman, who asked not to be named, again, for fear of retaliation, said she spent 3 years in a federal prison in Texas after being convicted years ago of aiding and abetting the smuggling of illegal aliens into California. She was a passenger in the front seat when the driver of the car tried to evade Border Patrol agents at a checkpoint, accidentally rolling the vehicle and killing one of three illegal immigrant passengers in the back seat. Asked why she did it, the woman said the cartel guias or guides were paying about $3,500 per head to transport illegal migrants northward once they've crossed the border. She says, I was young and stupid. Then the woman said she doesn't know what the going rates are for human smuggling these days, stressing she doesn't want to know. When Americans pick up illegal aliens at or near the border, that's considered alien smuggling. If they're furthering their entrance into the country, they have knowledge that they're doing so, and there's a financial gain involved. So Mr. Bird said, that is happening. But when family or friends already in the country pick up illegal immigrants from the camps and aren't being paid to do so, the case for smuggling is gone because there's no financial gain. Now, total U.S. apprehensions of illegal and inadmissible aliens in fiscal year 2022-23 from October 1st of 22 to September 30th of 23 were 3.2 million. That's apprehensions. In fiscal year 2021-22, such were more than 2.7 million and counting. I'm sorry, and counting known gotaways. Those whom Border Patrol agents record but don't catch. More than 8 million illegal aliens have entered the country in less than 3 years. More than 8 million. How much more than 8? I don't know. That's the thing. And just from October through December, there were 785,422 encounters along the southwest border with a record of approximately 302,034 in December alone, according to Customs and Border Protection data, all released on January 26th. That was the big information release date, January 26th. And one day in December, was December 19th specifically, more than 12,600 illegal immigrants were encountered, the most ever recorded in a single day. Now, after spending the night outside when temperatures dropped to the low 40s, about 200 of 400 illegal aliens, January 4th, walked out of one camp south of a town called Boulevard and headed into town in defiance of Border Patrol, according to Gabrielle Schultz, who, along with her family, works with Border Kindness. It's an NGO that helps feed illegal migrants at camps. And these aliens wandered around town asking merchants and residents for water and where they could charge their cell phones. She said, I saw them crying. I cried with them. They were hanging on a car. My God. Close the damned border. The illegal aliens left the camp unprocessed and they just vanished. Way before patrol agents could respond, and they simply got restless and walked into town. So Mr. Bird confirmed. He says it was really cold. There were a lot of them out there, and they got tired of waiting. They just started walking. A lot of them get picked up. They call people they know, people who are already here. So they just fall off the system. I would imagine that helps a great deal if they already have somebody they know here in the country. But Sam Schultz, Gabriel's husband, said in December that the latest surge of illegal aliens had lasted for 11 weeks and that he had been working 10-hour days to keep up with the demand for food and water. And that surge continued for another 4 weeks when it suddenly subsided in the new year. He criticized federal policies that encourage asylum seekers to cross the border illegally through gaps in the border wall rather than claiming asylum at U.S. ports of entry. Again, it's messaging from our own government, this administration, that is the entity that is to bear the responsibility for this chaos. Now, he says the crisis continues because the migrants let their friends and family know they made it to the U.S. and that the illegal backdoor system of immigration works. Schultz said they call home and they say, guess what? It worked. That's it. Simple as that. And social media is ubiquitous. 80% of these people are going to be out on the street in 3 days, and they're going to call home. Now, the relationship between the Border Patrol and these NGOs is one of mutual necessity, but not necessarily one of mutual respect, according to Mr. Bird. The NGOs, he said, are a necessary evil to us. They can create some issues with our operations. They don't appreciate us. They think that we're doing something wrong, but our hands are tied. See, so many of these NGOs are just nothing but a bunch of bleeding heart liberals. And they would themselves would keep the border open and let everybody pass. But agents have to follow directives to leave illegal aliens at the camps when there's no room for them at processing facilities. And Mr. Bird said, I think that's our fault. We're just the bad guys because we can't house them all at one time comfortably. But by the time they enter the U.S., illegal immigrants are anxious to reach their final destinations to meet friends and families and often complain about being held back at the camps or being detained for processing, which is understandable. See, I'm not without compassion. Because a lot of these people have a sense of entitlement, according to Bird. He says they just cross the border illegally, and then they want to know how long it'll take to be released. That's the first thing they always ask. They get impatient and they want us to hurry it along. And under current border policies, most know they'll eventually be released freely into the country unless there's some exigent circumstance, like they're on a terrorist watch list or they have severe criminal history from their country. But several suspected terrorists on the FBI's terror watch list have crossed the border near the town of Boulevard recently, and one is most likely a high-profile terrorist because an alert popped up on agents' phones about a month ago, leading to the suspect's arrest, thank God. Normally, Mr. Bird said, terror suspects are discovered only later when they're fingerprinted. Let's get the weekend started with a few laughs with Mike James.
I've been married 35 years this year. A long time. It's a really, really long time, actually. I remember when we got married, Pastor said, till death do you part. And I was like, all right. I didn't think I'd live this long, to be honest with you. It's a little longer than I anticipated. But I'm lucky because my wife is great. And I definitely married out of my league. She is a way better person than I am in almost every way. She is. But I think all men marry out of their league, honestly. I think if you're a man and you're married, you're out of your league. Because, I mean, if you're a man, you know. There's not a woman on earth as gross as you, right? I mean, we can admit that. That's pretty true. So, 35 years is a long time. People want to know what the secret is to being married. I I think it's funny they ask me. I'm not sure what the secret is. This is my trick. If it helps, I never got divorced. I know it seems obvious, but that's what I did. My brother got divorced, and it just looked like too much paperwork. If I'm not going to file my taxes, I'm certainly not going to go through that, right? That makes no sense at all. So laziness, I guess, is one of the secrets. Quality time, that's what a lot of people say, quality time is important. When we got married, I was in the military, I was in the Navy, and I was deployed all the time. And now, you know, I do this for a living, so I'm usually on the road. Well, not in the last year, so I've been home a lot more, and I can tell you this, quantity time is not the secret to a good marriage. But quality time is. So when I am home, I want to make sure we go out on date night, we have quality time, right? So I'll take my wife out. I'll like take her to dinner or something, and she'll go. I got to tell you, my wife will go anywhere I want. She's not picky. She'll go anywhere I want to go eat. Her only rule is it can't be one of the first 7 places I suggest. I don't know. I don't know why. And then we go out. This is so funny. My she does this all the time. It's a weird thing she has, but I find a lot of women that do this. We'll go out and she'll observe other couples, and then she'll tell me what's going on with them. Right? Yeah. Oh, look, they're on their first date. Shorted salad. Things are going. You don't know them at all. What are you talking about? She'll point out older couples. Always the same thing with an older couple. Look at that. I'll bet they're on like their 50th anniversary. It's so sweet. And she always says this. So sad, though. They're just sitting there staring and eating. They're not even talking. And I'm just thinking, that would be awesome. When does that start happening? I'd love to know when that starts. I'm very curious, you know, what does steak taste like if you're not choking it down with I'm sorry? I don't know. Kind of cool. And we don't have to go out for our quality time. We can stay in. We'll stay in, you know, and have, you know, watch TV, play a game. My wife loves playing games. That's her favorite thing. We'll do that. And her favorite game, if you guys are married, you've played this game. It's her favorite game. It's called Guess Why I'm Upset. You ever play that? That's a hoot, isn't it? I've never beat her. 35 years, I've never won. Not one time. I'm not even sure what the rules are, to be honest with you.
That'll do it. Have a terrific weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Monday's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you'd be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?